Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 201. Gosh, Tom, it's going to take a while, I think, before I forget what number we're up to. 201.
Pass me the aspirin. I'm still hungover from last week's party atmosphere and festivities. Wowee. What a time.
Yeah, we celebrated not only a little bit on the actual podcast, but during the Facebook live quiz. That was really fun.
It was a good show. It was a party.
We had a lot of party-themed questions, which was I thought we did really well. I thought the content was pretty on point. There were not many questions where people did not know the answer.
No. Everyone came to play.
Yeah. Just really quickly, love your T-shirt. I know nobody else is going to be able to see it because I'm not going to record this video, but it's a Care Bear with the two words above it saying emotionally exhausted.
Yep. That's about sums things up. I think we're on week, 14, 15 of lockdown?
I stopped counting a long time ago, but yeah, it's a long time.
But you know what I haven't stopped counting?
What's that?
Bloody news. There's a lot of it out there. We've just grabbed a few kernels of good stuff today because it's a big week last week, so I've been a little bit sleepy.
That's fair enough. We're coming off a long weekend where I didn't do much, and that's exactly what I was happy with. I basically just played the majority of the time. I just played Assassin's Creed Valhalla because I just want to be a Viking all the time now. That's the only thing I want.
I finished the OG Spider-Man game, and I'm almost done the first DLC. I also spent about 2 hours transforming giant robots, like playing with my Transformers.
That sounds fun. Yeah, just fun stuff. Easygoing, fun stuff.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. It's almost that time of year where we honour the magnificent confectionery called Marshmallows. The annual 3-day public holiday will be packed with activities the whole town can get involved in. Fan favourites like the Marshmallow Jumping Castle, Eating Competition, Tower Stacking, Using Them as Pillows, Hot Chocolate Recipe Workshop, Marshmallow Arts and Crafts will all be available again, as well as a performance from the world's first and only Drake impersonator, who dresses head to toe in, you guessed it, marshmallows. Can't wait! It will be a massively sweet and exciting time for all of us. The Werewolves of West Watchersville County will be conducting their annual all-hands-slash-all-paws-on-deck meeting in the spooky woods by the Creepy Creek next Monday. They and the authorities are strongly advising all public to steer clear, as the human scent is very enticing to them once they change. Not that they care if they eat you or not, it's just that they have a lot in their agenda to get through and don't want to get bogged down with a feeding frenzy. Monica Mittens, the local scarf maker, said she's downing knitting needles next month to give her hands and wrists a break. This winter has been a massive one for her business as she expanded into the, you guessed it, sock making trade. Enjoy your break, Monica. You sure deserve it. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
All right, well, let's crack into the news. Do you want to go first?
Okay, I saw one of the weirdest ads I've seen in a long time the other day. I don't know if you caught it, but we talked a while about there was a Lego Seinfeld set that's a recreation of the apartment and stuff like that. Well, because Netflix have just gotten the rights for Seinfeld and it's moved over there, they've paid Jerry Seinfeld a lot of money to dress up as a Lego man in a recreation of the apartment. And be harassed by a narrator, Bryan Cranston, who is pissed off that the Lego set doesn't have his character, who was a dentist on Seinfeld for a few episodes.
Yeah, right.
And like there's a running joke throughout it of him trying to get this dentist character into the set. And then Patrick Warburton, Putty, he pops up as a circle head for about a second and a half. Probably got paid real well for it.
Okay, this sounds like the people who Lego employed to come up with commercials and advertising were told, just do whatever you want.
It's really bizarre. It's so weird. And like Jerry Seinfeld's done some weird stuff in the past. I don't know if you remember, but he like ziplined into Khan dressed as a bee for the movie.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but that's amazing.
It was a thing, a very, very strange thing. But this is so weird. Give it a look. Well worth your time. I had a good chuckle.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they got Brian in it because he's gone on to much bigger and better things than being a dentist in a couple of episodes. So that's phenomenal.
Jerry even says, "What? Why are you here? You were in like 5 episodes." To which Brian replies, "6."
That's amazing. I don't know if you saw this, but Elijah Wood was talking to Dax Shepard on Dax's podcast, Armchair Expert. I don't know a lot of the backstory for the making of the films. Now I know a little bit more. So basically, Miramax bought the rights to Tolkien's books in the mid-90s and even like started to invest money into the development for films. However, there was some issue and Peter Jackson was like, "I think we need to try and talk Miramax out of this. We want to shop around." Somehow they managed to talk Harvey Weinstein into this, but Miramax apparently said, "You are allowed to shop it, but only over the weekend, so you better get your pictures right." And somehow they did it and it worked. He made a video and it worked. But Elijah then said, funny thing was, like, they were not happy with Miramax at that point in time. Like, they were over them. And the orcs in the movie were based off Harvey Weinstein as a sort of F you. And Elijah said, "I think it's okay to talk about that now because that guy is effing incarcerated, so F him." And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. So next time you watch it.
Watch for the orcs.
Yeah.
Harvey Weinstein.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. That's a good bit of trivia because fans know so much about not only the Tolkien books but the movies as well. So to get that little bit of that acorn, that's good. It's gold.
I'm going to move back from the mic for this. "Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys." My favourite line from any orc.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
Hey, have you seen that show, Mr. Corman, on Apple Plus, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it. It was on my list of things to watch when I eventually got Apple Plus.
Well, sounds like you don't need to stress about that. It now holds the distinction as only the second series that Apple has cancelled after their first season. They cancelled it on the air date of its final episode.
Are they chucking a Netflix on us?
I think it was just, this show's apparently a bit of a downer. I didn't want any of it. It's kind of, 500 Days of Summer, but even less charming.
Sure.
I don't know too much more other than that. I didn't watch it. I wasn't planning on watching it.
Yep.
But I don't know. He does some very cool stuff and he also does some stuff that just seems to be a little bit middle of the road. So hopefully he swings back the other way.
It's definitely, he is the kind of actor that whenever you see him attached to something, you either keep an eye out or you are determined enough to go and watch it. At least that for me, yeah.
He picks interesting stuff. I'll give him that. Even if it's stuff that doesn't interest me, he does seem to be interested in stretching himself. But he also does some pretty avant-garde stuff and you know, he's pushing the boundaries with online gear and promotion and production stuff behind the scenes, getting some pretty innovative stuff going. So I'd rather he focus on that.
Mm.
But still. It's good on him that I'm sure he was an exec producer on the show and very heavily involved behind the scenes.
Okay.
Can't all be Reese Witherspoon.
That should be on a t-shirt with a picture of Reese. On top it says, "We can't all be Reese Witherspoon." Speaking of Apple TV, this Christmas they will air an original Peanuts holiday special for Auld Lang Syne. So this will be after the Peanuts gang experience a disappointing Christmas because Grandma can't visit. Lucy decides to throw herself the best New Year's Eve party ever whilst Charlie Brown struggles to accomplish one of his resolutions before the clock strikes 12. This will debut on the 10th of December, so you'll have a bit of time to watch it And if you love it a lot, you can watch it every day until the 25th. Well, you can probably watch it after that. It doesn't go away, I would assume.
Doesn't disappear.
No, no. But interesting.
Pumpkin. Is that, they do that, don't they?
I think so, right? I know they did a. They've done holiday specials before for stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I think this is probably going to be a bit of a winner because people are going to go, oh, it's one of their specials. Yes, please.
Is it animated, like old school style?
I believe so. No, no, no. I believe it's.
Because I'd be down with some more stop motion Christmas gear. Oh, is it, do you know what were they? The Baskin?
Oh, yeah. The really. Do you mean the ones where they would like have the. Not the Christmas Grinch, but it was like a scary Christmas monster or something, yeah. And they would do the Easter. Yeah. My friend watches them every single year without fail.
Good value.
Yeah. And they've been around since, what, 60s, 70s, something like that?
Long time.
Classics.
Long time.
Classics.
The only program dumb enough to cross the streams. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
So there's lots of rumours swirling around about Daredevil. We've talked about this in the past as to whether Charlie Cox, who starred as Daredevil on the Netflix series, which have now been more than 2 years, so the rights are completely back with Marvel. Lots of rumours are going about that he will be popping up again. There's people convinced that we saw him in the trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home. There's people convinced that he's going to pop up in She-Hulk, which makes a lot of sense as being a lawyer show.
Yeah, maybe you're talking about that.
Yes, there's now further rumors going that he and the supporting cast of Daredevil may all be joining the cast of Echo, which Echo is a spin-off from Hawkeye, which we haven't seen yet. Echo is a deaf superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way that Daredevil, no sight, Echo location to
sure, right.
Kind of the flip. So he mentors her for a while, all this sort of stuff. So I could see that very much being a part of her show. We don't know whether this is going to happen or not. Everyone's just jumping to all sorts of conclusions. Vincent D'Onofrio keeps putting his hand up and saying, I do want to play Kingpin again. Yes, please, can I be Wilson Fisk? So everyone's keen to see it happen. These rumors seem to pop up every week, which is why I keep touching on them, but who knows whether they'll come to pass. I bet Charlie Cox must just love this. Everyone's got so much desire to see him back.
It's almost like the public is doing the work for his agent.
And if Marvel wanted to troll everyone so hard, like so incredibly hard, they need to confirm that Daredevil's coming up and then have it be a Doctor Strange multiverse thing, and instead it's Ben Affleck.
Oh, no. And everyone's like, oh, that's not the Daredevil we wanted.
Not at all.
There was also something I saw about Guardians of the Galaxy and James Gunn talking about bringing a character that he's most excited about to bring from the Marvel comics and bring into Marvel. I don't even know what you call it now. Disney MCU. Marvel stuff. Yes.
James has been very busy over the last few days. It seems that his commitments to DC and the Suicide Squad are really coming to a tail end. So his focus is entirely back on Marvel, which by the sounds of things has been the case for some time. That he's been back on work at Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's not just Guardians 3. So yes, he spoke about the fact that he's adding a major character. I honestly don't know who that could be. There's all sorts. It could be one of the villains. It could be a really obscure cosmic character that they're going to include. We'll see. But he also posted some updates on the Guardians of the Galaxy ride that's coming to Epcot over in Florida, which is not the same of the Guardians of the Galaxy breakout, the former Tower of Terror at Disneyland. This is going to be a roller coaster that's inside and outside a building, kind of Space Mountain-y of shooting through space
fun.
With the Guardians or something. So that's really fun. And so each Disney park has beautiful bronze statues of Walt holding Mickey's hand, or some of them have Roy, his brother, depending on, you know, who opened the park, this sort of stuff. There's one, I'm not sure if it's even there yet, but it's still, but Michael Eisner. They've opened out the front of where this will be at Epcot. There's Rocket with Tiny Groot standing on his shoulder in bronze. And it was very clever keeping within that Disney family. And he also talked a little bit about the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special, which will be coming next Christmas, plus a baby or teenage Groot animated TV show. So, he's keeping busy with the Guardians gear. It's very good.
It's almost like an endless well. of content.
Going back to, I don't think he will stick around with the Guardians after three. I imagine that he's talked a lot about he's going to wrap the story up emotionally the way he intended to, which is cool. Happy, you know, they can split that team off all sorts of different ways. They've already shown that Rocket can hang with the Avengers pretty well by himself, this sort of stuff. Who knows?
So I'm assuming that with the third one, actually has it, now I'm getting confused. There has been talk that Thor will be in the third one, right? Or yeah.
The Guardians are going to be in Thor 4.
Right. Okay. Oh, yes, of course.
I don't know whether Thor will be.
Right. Well, something may change, yeah, within that story for him not to appear. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah.
There's a lot to keep track of, isn't there?
So much. I can barely cope. Just a quick one. Ellie Kemper from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is back at Netflix. She's going to be doing a romantic comedy. Blythe Danner is in it as well, who is, of course, Gwyneth Paltrow's mother. So it's about Ellie's character who signs up for a wilderness survival course a year after getting divorced. And then she discovers through this experience that in getting there, she's basically found herself. Now, I'm assuming that this is not going to be a super corny one just because she's in it and she manages to play those quirky, weird characters. So I'm jumping to conclusions, but I feel like I'm kind of confident with this in that it's going to be weird, quirky comedy, romantic comedy.
Okay.
And not like your Hallmark comedies, you know?
Sure. I honestly, I could see her going both ways. She appeals to a particular audience and I could see them loving schmaltzy Hallmark stuff. Yeah. She's very funny. I've seen her performing for lots of different writers. So it's not just Tina Fey's voice coming through her that makes her work.
Yeah, definitely. I remember her in, of course, The Office, but she was also in the movie Bridesmaids.
Mm, very good.
Wait a second. Was Tina Fey involved in that? I think she was in it for a second, but I don't think she wrote it.
I don't think she wrote it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, so I'm going to bundle these two in together and move one past one very quickly because I don't have much to say about it. But Disney and ScarJo settled. Right?
Yep.
Reportedly for about 40-ish million. So,
is that sort of her recouping what she potentially would have gotten if it had gone into theater? Okay, yep.
Yes. And also squashing things so it doesn't set a precedent for the rest of Hollywood.
Okay.
It made the problem go away before it went to court.
Yep. Fair enough.
But I remember on the flip of that, so that was one of the biggest openings of the year, and then it fell very quickly. Mm. Venom 2, which I haven't seen and I can't see, and fuck you, COVID, opened big, like real big. So it made 90 million, which made it the second biggest October opening ever, only behind Venom 1.
Wow. Okay.
Not dealing with a COVID pandemic at the time. So it's not particularly far behind Venom 1. So this bodes very, very well for things moving forward. It actually opened bigger than Black Widow.
So why? Why is it just, are people who are allowed to go to the theater just desperate to go to the theater?
I think there's a combination of things. One, this is a horror comedy action adjacent thing that appeals very, very broad in October. So it's the lead up to Halloween and there's not a lot of competition.
Yep.
There hasn't been anything big for a couple of weeks either side. You know, there's Bond is coming soon.
Mm. Yeah.
It's kind of was the perfect spot to drop Venom 2.
Mm-hmm.
People that loved the first one apparently are loving this one even more. Woody Harrelson goes all out and is kind of resuming his character from Natural Born Killers.
Okay.
And they lean into the weird, apparently. It was like the weird sexual energy between Eddie and the suit from the first film is even more there this time. And they're playing it as an odd couple. It's directed by Andy Serkis, who's a master of this, you know, motion capture CGI. It sounds like a lot of things came together to really work for this film. I'm so angry that I haven't seen it yet.
What do you reckon your chances are of seeing it in the theater, in the cinema?
I don't know, because we're still a few weeks off before cinemas potentially opening.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't Sony, it would be lined up for a streaming service already.
Mm.
Hopefully it's only a 45-day window, which means maybe I'll get to see in a movie, or maybe I'll just buy it off iTunes.
Oh, yeah. It's not the same though, is it? Speaking of Sony, so they've begun testing free game trials for the PS5, allowing like people to have a play of selected games for a few hours before purchasing them, aka going back to demos. So it's only available in the UK at the moment, and it's only two games. So it really is just a trial. So you've got Death Stranding, which has been out for a while, but this is the director's cut.
5 hours of walking to trial.
Exactly. And Sackboy, which I think you played, right?
Oh, Sackboy's so good.
Yeah, cool. So that's probably your best pick if you are in the UK and you are able to do this. But how long they give you to play depends on the type of game. So Death Stranding, they're giving players up to 6 hours of free gameplay. So maybe because of that reason, there's just a lot of nothing at the beginning. But Sackboy, you get a little bit less. I think it's about five, something like that. So your internet speed may affect how long you get, because the minute you hit the download trial button on your console or add to library from the web, that's when they start counting down your time. So that's a bit rough, right? So that means if the game's going to take, I don't know, let's say the game might take 2 hours to download if you're lucky, because I think Death Stranding's like 60 gigabytes or something like that. So you're not going to get long if you've got crappy internet, which is why I think this is just in trial at the moment and may have to be tweaked depending on where in the world you are.
Yeah.
Because if you want to give Death Stranding a bit of a go, and at 60 gigabytes, your trial may be finished before the download finishes. I know, you'd be so angry. But it's really cool that they're doing demos again. And I'm wondering if maybe this may also be not negating, but potentially, you know how there's that thing where people play a bit of a game and they're like, actually, this is not what I wanted. I really don't like it. Can I get a refund?
Yeah.
And they'll say, well, you already played your, you started it as a free trial, so no. Or yes, or whatever the situation is. But I think that's pretty cool. I think that that means people don't have to spend time researching too much and hearing other people's opinions on a game. They can just jump in.
Yeah, make their own mind up.
Exactly.
I used to love discs on the front of magazines.
Yeah, sometimes that was the only game you played for a long time, just over and over and over again.
I got a trial of Command & Conquer Red Alert that I just wore out. Just the actual game. It was great. I got one trailer for you.
Yeah, nice.
And it's not for a film. It's for a new, for a returning TV series, but it just made me go, great. Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, which I watched a lot of season one and then didn't see season two. And I scratched my head. Why didn't I see season two? And then clicked for me when I saw this trailer the other day because it moved to HBO Max.
Okay.
So season two has already happened, but season three kicked off October 1st. And in the trailer, I have seen going to be joining the Scooby-Doo gang for episodes this season are Cher. Actually, the second time Cher's appeared on Scooby-Doo. She and Sonny were in an episode back in like 1979 or something.
Wow, that's fun.
Yes. Sean Astin.
Yep.
Yeah. Jason Sudeikis.
Cool. He's funny.
Yes. And Reverend Run from Run DMC. Anyway, they're celebrating Scoob-tober.
Scoob-tober. Is that a brand new
HBO
thing?
HBO Max. I don't know if it's a real thing, but they're celebrating.
Yeah.
And they're uploading more than 20 Scooby-Doo films from the vast animated library over the course of the month. So you can have a really good time.
Now, you have a VPN. Do you have HBO Max?
Mm. Yes.
So you'll be able to catch season two and three?
Yes.
Nice. You've got a lot of watching to do.
I do. I've got so much watching to do. Every time I think I've caught up with things,
No, I know. It's the same feeling here.
Drags me back into the whirlpool of backlog.
He's sad. That was brilliant news, and I enjoyed every second of it. Before we get into watching suggestions, though, I believe coming in hot and fast, Tom's fun fact.
Well, this week's fun fact I need your help with, actually.
Okay, let me see if I can help you.
Good, because I didn't put it in my pocket.
Oh.
I actually put it in inside this large, oversized novelty fun fact pinata.
Gee, let's go get some sticks and whack it.
Can you whack it and see if you can bust open a fun fact, pick it up and pass it over to me? It's totally random. I've got a whole bunch in there. Let's find out which one we got. You ready?
Here we go.
Oh, everywhere. Whoa. All right, grab one, pass it over here.
Okay, oh, yeah. Okay. This one.
Oh, good one. You picked one from Transformers.
Brilliant.
So as I said, I've been building a lot of robots over the weekend, having a lot of fun with Transformers. It made me go back and rewatch Transformers 1 and 2. I'm not going to talk about it in watching this week because I've talked about it before. But so there's, I don't know if you remember in the first one, compared to some of the others, it's a little bit more realistic and there's not too many crazy robots. But there's one scene that is quite memorable with some soldiers in the desert. They're running through an abandoned, blown up small village, and they're being hunted by a scorpion transformer named Scorponic. And it jumps up out of the ground, twirls, jumps back into the ground, burrows after them and stuff. They're running away scared.
Scary.
Yes. So there's his setup. Okay. So when it's bursting out right on the heels of the soldiers, the effect was achieved by detonating a primer cord under the sand. The explosions would be in close proximity and very dangerous to the actors in the scene. So before the scene was shot, Michael Bay told all the actors to run and keep running no matter what happens, no matter what else, or else they could be seriously injured or even worse, killed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough. You will literally run for your life. I get it. Yep.
As a result, the look of panic on the actors' faces as they flee from Scorponic in the scene is 100% genuine. That's the same trick that was pulled on, that was very similar to Alan Rickman in Die Hard, where they set him up in the rig to be on the outside of the building and went 3, 2, 1 and dropped him on 2.
And that's where you get that iconic facial expression.
Yes. And it's the same thing in this Transformer. Yes, I can see clearly the panic look on Tyrese's face. Tyrese has a good panic face anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this situation, he looked genuinely scared. And now you know why.
All right. So we're all going to have to go back and watch it just to have a look at that.
Mm.
Fun. That is a great fun fact. I enjoyed that.
Well, you picked it, so well done to you.
Oh, I'm excited to see what happens next week. That's for sure. I reckon we should have a look at some watching suggestions.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Tom, what have you been watching this week?
What have I been watching?
Yes.
I watched a documentary called Closed for Storm.
Closed for Storm?
Closed for Storm. Now, it follows the saga, shall we say, of a theme park in New Orleans called Jazzland, which was opened in, I want to say, 2001, 2002, somewhere around there. Millions of dollars to build. Quite a large one. Geographically, very clever location because it was hours drive to the closest theme park in any other way. They invested a whole lot of money and made a New Orleans jazz themed theme park. Very cool.
That's what people go to New Orleans for the jazz, for the music, for the vibe, man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it went bankrupt in a year and a half. Mm. And so they sold to Six Flags, which is a giant network of theme parks across the states. Unfortunately, they sold to not at a particularly great time in Six Flags history, where they were a little bit lean. The following year, Six Flags closed two of their parks. Following year, 2005, was when Hurricane Katrina hit. And that's what this documentary is actually about, showing how the park was left for 6 weeks under 7 feet of water.
That's a long time. Like that's that you can't, nothing's going to not be sodden.
Here's the difficulty is that all the rides and machinery and concrete fixtures and everything survived just fine. But all the buildings, everything inside was destroyed and ripped out. So to try and repair and get back to where things were, $50 million minimum. To try and get it back to a polished type thing would be a lot more. Try and demolish it is going to cost at least $20 million. Oh, I forgot to mention, it's still standing now.
So is this the kind of theme park where photographers get like sneak in and take photographs of.
A good 20 minutes of this film is just following urban explorers.
I like that.
As they go through and discover, oh, look, here's the storage room where all the clothes are. And look, all the pants are still sealed in plastic bags.
Wow.
It was fascinating. And then also following different council members and people applying for different things to try and, you know, let's reclaim this and turn it into a wetland. Let's turn this into a sports facility. Let's knock it down so the poor people that live in this area who, you know, all of New Orleans has bounced back except for this one community because it's like the council has turned its back on it and said, look, it's going to cost too much to knock that down. We can't. Sorry about your housing prices, but.
It's weird because I've never even heard of this before. What was it called? Jazz World or something?
Called Jazzland.
Jazzland. I've never heard of it.
As I said, it was only open for about a year and a half. Then it became Six Flags New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And like the roller coaster is still standing. Like the big one is still standing. The sign that said Six Flags, all the lettering has come off the Six Flags logo. It's a white sign except for the panels underneath where you can slide things in.
Oh,
and it still says closed for storm. The message they put up there on the day when they had to close and never reopened in August 2005. It was a really good documentary. I really enjoyed it. I mean, obviously it was quite emotionally manipulative and it was very much from the viewpoint of people that want to bring the park back.
But would that ever be a thing now anyway? I mean, let's say they do actually decide to bring it back. We're in 2021. By the time they bring it back, it's going to be close to 20 years that it will have been closed for. That's phenomenal.
It's not the smartest idea for that location. Like for New Orleans, so Jazzland, their intention second year was to open a water park and they didn't have the money to do that. And if they'd done that, they might have survived and might have had enough money to keep going and, you know, perhaps repair things after the destruction and stuff. But just, no, it all fell apart. And it seems like a case of if they'd gone with the water park first and built up, then maybe a lot of lessons learned. Very interesting stuff.
Where did you – was that on iTunes?
It was on iTunes.
Cool. Yes. That sounds really interesting. Speaking of interesting, I've been watching that show on Netflix called Clickbait, 8 episodes.
Is that with my boy from Entourage?
Yeah. I tell you what.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You can't say the word entourage and not have –
without – making that noise.
Oh, yeah.
So the last thing I saw Adrian in with Melissa Joan Hart.
I know the one. Is it not Never Been Kissed?
Drive Me Crazy. It had Melissa Joan Hart in it and he had like his iconic floppy curly hair, which he also had in, I think, all of Entourage, right? I didn't really watch much Entourage. But
is Vinny going to cut his hair?
Yeah, exactly. So to see him in this film playing a father of teenage boys with short hair, I was like, "Who? What? Hang on a second. Sure. Where has the last 20 years gone? And how old is this guy actually?" So I had to look him up. He's born in 1976, so a little bit older than I actually thought he was. I mean, for his age, he looks totally fine. But for me, the last thing I literally saw him in was something from just before Y2K was not an issue. So in this show, he plays a guy that goes missing and he pops up on a video that becomes a viral hit on the internet. And in the video, he's holding up signs that say, "I abuse women. I killed a woman." And then the thing that the title is like, if this gets over 5 million views, I will die. It's pretty full on. So each episode focuses on one particular character. And of course, you know, the story revolves around them for that episode, but you're also finding out about other characters as well during those episodes. It really means that you don't want to look ahead to see what the name of the next episode is.
Sure.
Just in case, because I've got my theories as to who the culprit or culprits potentially are, but I suspect will not find out till the very last episode, because a lot of stuff happened episode six, so two episodes to go, and I was like, oh, this could all wrap up right now. So I suspect maybe there's a lot more to it. Also looked it up, and the majority of it is filmed in Melbourne. It's supposed to be set in San Francisco.
I did know that it was a local production.
Yeah, it's not bad, because it, for the first maybe, I don't know, half of the first episode, I just kind of sat there going, oh, yeah, this is in a city in America. I haven't really been taking any notice. The landmarks have not been super obvious. And then I think you see the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm like, hang on a second. Why haven't we been seeing like the big steep hill streets? And that's because they don't have them in Melbourne. And once I found out, you know, you're like, oh, that 100% is a street. Like, that's an Australian street. That looks like every house on there. There are bloody agapanthers out the front of every house. Like, it's so Aussie. But yeah, it sucks you in. You know, those mysteries, they really suck you in. So I've been enjoying that. It's been a good one to get through. I've been watching a couple of episodes at a time because one's not enough. You know what I mean? But three would be too much.
I get you. Yeah.
Making more sense than when Joey and Rachel hooked up. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I was very excited to see that Eli Roth's History of Horror.
Cool. This is one of your favourites.
I do love this show because it's done in the right spirit, and it's got all sorts of people from movies and, you know, surrounding pop culture talking about why they love horror and why particular things are good.
Mm.
And being that it's third season, they've started to really stretch the scope of what the show is. So first season was, you know, creatures from the Black Lagoon or mythical werewolves or various things. Like that. Now we're on to stuff like this episode. The theme for the first episode was sequels that don't suck.
Okay.
And it was all about horror movies. That it's not necessarily about improving the original, but it's about grabbing that steering wheel, taking the premise and running into the ground and going a different direction.
Mm.
So you think of Aliens versus Alien.
Sure.
Alien was a tiny claustrophobic horror film. The second one was an action movie.
Yeah, happened. And they often talk about what kind of Alien fan are you? Are you an Alien or an Aliens fan? Because those two, that audience is very well, it's very so split. Different. Yeah.
I'm very happy to say I'm Aliens all the way.
Yeah.
I enjoy Alien, but Aliens, that's my jam.
It's exciting. I love that sort of thing.
So there's that. There was a huge segment about Gremlins 2, the new batch, which I fucking love that movie.
I they've merged for me. Funnily enough, I did look up Gremlins to see if I could watch it. I couldn't find it anywhere on like the streaming services, but Gremlins 2 is on Netflix.
You don't need to rewatch Gremlins 1.
Okay.
I promise you, everything you think you remember about Gremlins
it's is from the second
Gremlins
one. One.
No, from Gremlins 1.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Gremlins 2 is where Joe Dante, the director, wanted nothing to do with Gremlins again. He finished the first one. They had to reinvent animatronics and puppetry and all sorts of things to make that film. He was so burnt out on it, he wanted nothing to do with it. He doesn't do a lot of sequels. 6 years later, they backed up with a money truck and said, we'll let you do it. We want Gremlins so bad that you have complete creative control. And he says in this thing, because they interview him for the show, he's like, I never got that offer before. I never got it again. He's like, and then it straight away smash cuts to Edgar Wright, who just goes, I've made some movies, but I'm pretty sure he was trying to destroy his career. And it's just pogos back and forth between these other horror directors that you love going, what the hell was Joe Dante doing with that film? Don't get me wrong. I love it. But that is the biggest cinematic biting the hand that feeds ever. So if you don't remember, it basically takes what happened in the first movie and puts it instead in a high rise in the middle of the city that is a microcosm of every excess of the early 90s. And it's cokehead bigwigs, creepy scientists messing around with genetics in a lab, just public access television, such a weird thing. And yeah, I love that. It talks a lot about Psycho 2, which is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. Yep.
Nothing to do with Hitchcock, you know. Sorry, everything to do with the original film, but no Hitchcock's presence.
It was years and years later as well, wasn't it?
22 years later or something.
Yeah, like that's right.
And I don't know, it was just, it was a really interesting episode breaking down some stuff that you maybe didn't think of as much as the original, but a lot of them made me go, oh yeah, I kind of want to rewatch that again. It's great. And then it finished up with talking a lot, the double of Freddy 3, so Nightmare on Elm Street 3, yep. Which is where the silliness starts and the one-liners begin. And they talk with Robert Englund, and he talks about how that's the his favorite Freddy performance because that's where the one-liners came in, and he ad-libbed some one-liners. But it's the last film before it crosses over into him being a silly nightmare demon.
Yep, I get you.
There's the line between funny and silly. And then the flip of that is talking a lot about Bride of Chucky, which is the fourth Chucky film.
With
and
Jennifer Tilly, right? Is she correct. The bride? Yeah.
Yes, because it's the same director and writer of all of them. Mm-hmm. And he said by the third one, they were remaking the first film for the third time. Right. And he couldn't do that again. So he decided to make it horror comedy and flip it completely on its head and lean into the ridiculous premise. And it breathed new life into that franchise. That film was so good. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see where the rest of Eli Roth's History of Horror season 3 goes because, you know, they've done the – they've done a lot of the big sexy stuff now. Yeah. They can start digging into some weird kit.
Well, what I like is that it's made you now have a whole heap of things that you want to watch during October for Halloween.
Yep.
I mean.
And then there's other ones in there that I have no intention of watching that I now have the crib notes to. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's real handy. I don't need to. I'm never going to watch Candyman 4.
Yeah.
20 years ago, I would have watched Candyman for sure. But these days, no, I'm pussy. So I'll watch Chris Hardwick laugh it up and give me some crib notes.
That's way more safe.
Yeah.
Far less scary.
Him and Rob Zombie are on most episodes.
Together? Not together.
No, not together. But they are very good friends. Chris Hardwick starred in Rob Zombie's first film.
Oh, House really?
A Thousand Corpses. Yes, he ends up there.
A corpse.
Very dead.
Yeah. He's one of them.
They're the Muggles, still waiting on their acceptance letter to Hogwarts. You're listening to We Are the Watchers.
Well, I decided to go back and rewatch Airplane from, what was that like?
Surely you can't be serious.
Yeah, I know. Don't call me Shirley. From 1980, I think. I think it was just out of the 70s. And for me, I'd actually watched the Naked Gun movies before I'd actually seen Airplane.
Sure.
So yes, I already knew the style of comedy that it was, but it was funny because I was watching it. I don't know if whether it was more refined or just a little more mature in that style than in Airplane. And yeah, some of the jokes are a bit, you know, daggy and old now. Some you're like, whoa, they would never, that's not a joke that would ever be written now. Gosh, you wouldn't be allowed to. But what I enjoyed was watching the jokes in the background. So not necessarily the jokes in the foreground where the main actors are, you know, saying, you know, don't call me Shirley. Watch the stuff in the background because it's one of those movies that's why it's so popular or has been over the years because it's a lot of rewatchability. People are rewatching it because you don't get everything the first time.
Got to go back in and rediscover the stuff. That's cool.
Yeah, and there's so much in there that you're like, oh my gosh, airports are not even like this anymore. I can't even imagine a time where this would be even the joke that you could – like the reality that you could base the joke off.
It is weird how quickly things have changed. So like, as I said, I watched Transformers, and then Transformers 2, which I think Transformers 2 was from 2009.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
And there are a pair of homophobic ethnic gang member Transformers named Skids and Mudflap. Hey, yeah, man, right. You can't be doing that. Can't be coming around here with that piece of cotton. Right. You got to go home cry to your boyfriend.
Yeah,
I imagine Airplane.
Yes,
kind of like a Blazing Saddles,
Yes. Well, there's actually there's this ongoing joke where there are these two African American guys, and you can't understand what they're saying because they're speaking in Jive Talk.
Right.
So what they do is have subtitles underneath, and then they get at one point in time they're trying to talk to a flight attendant.
Yes.
Flight attendant, which is not what they call her. I think they call her a stewardess or something. And they're asking for something. And she can't understand what they're saying. And then this lady, this Caucasian lady in her mid-60s says, "Sorry, do you need any help? I can speak Jive." And so she translates for her. And the thing is, the thing that I got was, oh, that's the mother from Leave It to Beaver. You know, that cookie cutter sitcom from the 50s or 60s or whatever. That's that mother. And I'm sure that at the time, that was the joke. You're like, that's the Leave It to Beaver mother.
How is someone who was so white bread talking Jive?
Exactly. And that's the joke. But yeah, it's, I think for me, you know, like revisiting stuff like Revenge of the Nerds, which I watched all the time as a kid, you know, or growing up, and just rewatching it again and going, I think I just glossed over all of this stuff because I didn't understand. And two, there's no way this movie could be made now, but I'm glad that it exists so that I can go, wow, it's so, the 80s were so different. Yes.
I kind of want to go back and rewatch both Me, Myself and Irene.
Oh, yeah.
And Stuck on You, the one with Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear as conjoined
twins. That's right, yes.
Now, they're both Farrelly Brothers movies who very much follow in the footsteps of the Zuckers, who did your Airplane. And then he went and did The Green Book, Nabil's favorite.
Oh, yeah, Nabil's all-time number one tip-top favorite. I do remember that one about the conjoined twins was later than I think I expected it to be.
Yes, it came along a fair way into,
yeah,
you can't get away with just wearing a big T-shirt, boys. We don't believe it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think I only watched a bit of it on TV and I was like, nah, I think I'm all right.
Wasn't great.
I think I'm
wasn't
okay.
Wasn't great. I saw it in the cinema.
Oh, you paid the money to see that. Gosh.
I in the cinema.
Yeah, so I'm now a little bit intrigued to watch Naked Gun.
Do it. Report back.
Yeah, I think I will. I think I will. See how.
If you can think of any other films that have aged poorly that we should dip our toes back into, please let us know, because maybe that could become a recurring feature.
I like that.
We can't give it a name. We'll just give it the sound effect.
Yeah. Ooh, yikes. Perfect. All right. It is now time for the quiz.
Yes. I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready.
This one's a fun one. This one was based off, actually, Nightmare on Elm Street, because I don't know why it popped into my head. I was like, that is the first movie that Johnny Depp's in. It's a fun trivial fact that I always seem to remember.
If anything's going to pop into your head, it's Freddy.
That's true. I must have woken up from the dream and went, I was just having a dream about that. So this is, whose first acting gig is this? So I'll give you the name of the TV show or film.
Right.
And if it's a bit obscure, I'll give you a bit of a background to synopsis to it. And it's an either or. So you don't have to like think of every single actor that ever existed. It's an either or.
All right.
This is 1987's Return to Horror High. So in 1982, the town of Crippen was rocked by a series of murders at the high school, and the killer was never caught. So several years later, this production company came in, and they were going to do like this doco or something about it. So the production's pretty low budget, so the cast and crew have to stay at the real high school where the murders were. And look, can I tell you that there were some strange disappearances, the occasional murder, and it was very shocking. I've never heard of this film, which is why I had to give you the synopsis. Whose first acting gig was this? Was it George Clooney or Keanu Reeves? 1987.
I'm going to go with Keanu Reeves, 1987. 1987, Keanu Reeves. Answer.
You should have gone with George Clooney. I feel like Keanu Reeves.
He would have been too young. You're right.
He's probably a little bit younger than George, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a bit.
But not enough to, yeah, for it to be obvious. All right. Now,
good one.
Yes.
I might be watching that.
No, it sounds terrible. Maybe I'd watch the trailer of on YouTube and that'd do me. This one is a TV show, Midsummer Murders, quite a popular show. This was an episode in the year 2000. This actor played a womanizing criminal. Was it Tom Hardy or Orlando Bloom?
I'd like to say Tom Hardy, please. That would be my answer.
Look, once again, you should have chosen the other one. It's Orlando Bloom.
I thought he'd been busier of preparing for Tolkien by then.
It must have been moments before.
It must have been moments
before. Before he was legless. 1986's Critters 3. Ooh. Now, this is between two friends, Tobey Maguire or Leonardo DiCaprio. Leo. Yeah, it's Leo. Have you ever seen it? Critters.
Yes.
I feel like I have too.
And they are firm friends, firm Hollywood friends, Tobey and Leo.
They were part of the cool actors group that would go out and party a lot back around Titanic days, right? 1988's movie Mystic Pizza starred Julia Roberts. I think that was one of her first things. But we don't want to talk about her right now because one of two firm acting friends, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, one of those two were in it. Who are you going to pick?
Mystic Pizza, you say?
Yeah. I'm not sure I've seen this film all the way through.
1998?
1988.
88.
Yeah, years ago. These two are around the same age, I think. No, I think maybe Matt's a bit older.
I think it's Matt Damon.
It is Matt Damon. Yeah, it's Matt Damon. Matt
Damon because Ben Affleck, I don't remember popping up too much until Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, right.
I know he was in stuff before then, but.
Yeah, I think because Matt Damon's just that little bit older, maybe he started.
And he was clearly a child actor.
Yeah. He had the face. We still got that face. There was an episode of Monk in 2006. I've forgotten to give any more information about that whatsoever. So you just have a stab in the dark. Was it Brie Larson or Jennifer Lawrence in a 2006 episode of Monk? A show that I never watched.
I'll say Brie Larson because I've seen her dip her toe into television.
Not Brie Larson. It was Jennifer Lawrence.
Crikey, I've done poorly.
Recently, I started watching The United States of Tara with Toni Collette and John. What's his last name? I just think of him as Aiden from Sex and the City and from Northern Exposure. Anyway, she plays their daughter, Brie Larson. She looks very different. She's very young.
She was Abed's girlfriend on Community.
So that must have been, so that would have been just after United States of Tara then.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was before Room and
yes,
things that gave her some acting clout.
That's right. Yeah. And now she's just, I think, a gamer on YouTube, I think. It's the last time I saw her, she was doing something on Nintendo Switch. 1999, Sex and the City was a massive show and this actor played a smoker who attempted to flirt with Carrie Bradshaw. Was it Bradley Cooper or Pedro Pascal? These two are both born the same year.
I want to say Bradley, but because it's you, I'm going to say Pedro Pascal.
No, say Bradley. Say it.
Bradley Cooper.
Yes, Bradley Cooper. Yep. I have no recollection whatsoever. And then I thought, I'm going to try and get an actor who's around the same age. So I just typed in famous actors 1975. Pedro showed up. I was like, perfect. And that takes us to the end of the quiz. That one was a little harder.
You dumped me on that one.
That's probably one of the hardest.
I hope people at home were screaming at me, Tom. The fuck is going on with you?
Don't you know who started a Midsummer Murder episode in 2000? Goodness gracious me. He looked very young, Orlando. In the photograph I saw from said episode.
Sure.
But we'll never know because neither of us will ever think to watch it.
Never, never, never.
We've got too many other things to do, including the lunchtime quiz this week, which will be really fun. Probably one of the – well, it's definitely going to be the last weekly one. We'll be coming back. We haven't decided when. Mainly
working out the format.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, now that lockdown's sort of lifting a bit in Sydney and New South Wales, we've got other things to do, I guess.
Real work to get back to.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a bit sad because it was a nice way to sort of finish the week, wasn't it?
It was a lot of fun. So yeah. We've got to keep doing it from time to time. We'll get a regular schedule. It won't be every Friday.
No.
But that means that we can put a bit more effort in.
Exactly.
Maybe have some more special prizes.
And some special guests.
Ooh,
and
yes.
We can all be in the studio.
Oh, yes. Touching.
Well, not really. Just based on how big the studio is, that's not possible.
We won't be touching. But I'm like, you and I can high five hello.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Human contact.
We can like run out of our own shot and appear in the other person's shot.
Yes.
Yeah. Some magic. It's a magic, okay. It's a magic moment for everyone. It's going to take a while, I think, for people to get used to actually socializing and being in rooms with people again.
Yeah, I wasn't hugely social to start with. I'm very good at doing this sort of social, or talking to someone through a computer or having a chin wag and letting other people listen. But if there's more than four people there, I'm not comfortable.
Do you know what one of my favorite ideas of a weekend is? Having nothing to do.
That's pretty good. So
that's exactly what I've been doing the whole time. But yet I still complain because that's the kind of person I am. Tom, wonderful stuff. I'll see you on Friday. On that note, thank you very much.